The New Dominion, everything Virginia. Politics, economy, society, pop culture, sports, and more. And it's on the air. From our studios in the Shenandoah Valley, it's the New Dominion Show.
It's campaign season, Crystal. I say this every week, but you know, now with the weather changing, finally, after all my complaints the last several weeks, you know, we really are getting into the heart of what's going on in Virginia with, I guess, the next few years of politics. Welcome to the New Dominion Show. I'm Chris Graham.
I'm Crystal Graham.
Of course, big news today involving Mark Warner. We'll get more into that later with Quentin Kidd, professor at Christopher Newport University, of course, a regular here on the New Dominion Show. Also, this week, I'll just give a hint already. Tomorrow on newdominion.com, thenewdominion.com, big story, the top story of the week is about Jim Gilmore. Now that we know what Mark Warner is going to do, the question is, what is Jim Gilmore going to do? Of course, there's a lot of people we have to ask that question about: George Allen, Bob McDonnell, Bill Bowling, Tom Davis, even the Northern Virginia congressman. But Jim Gilmore is the focus this week on thenewdemand.com. Talked to Jim Gilmore last week in Stanton. He visited, spoke to a local GOP breakfast, and talked with him and some conservative leaders from across the state, also some political scientists, just to get a sense of what Gilmore should do now that we know where things are in Virginia politics. So that's the big story. Also, I just hinted to you, we're talking to Quentin Kidd about that. Also joining us to talk about some issues with dams in Virginia. Dam safety is a big issue, of course. As we speak, a tropical storm, I guess it'll be a tropical storm by the time it gets here, maybe tropical depression by the time it gets here, is headed from Texas and could put some dams at stress. And Serena McLean will join us to talk about a dam safety report that came out last week that puts a number of Virginia dams in question in terms of their safety. So we'll get more into that. And also joining us, a special guest, Daniel Gilbert. Now, you might not have heard much about him yet. You'll hear about him a lot today. He has announced that he's running for the Republican Party presidential nomination. Now, he's very much a long-shot candidate, but he's running for a reason. He's a strong conservative, and he wants to see more strong conservatives come out and really take over that Republican Party again. And he's a little afraid it's moving too far to the center. We'll talk with Daniel about that and get his thoughts, and hopefully have Daniel on as a regular here to talk about the Republican Party race for the GOP nomination in 2008. So big show for you this week as we head into fall now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see the politics starting to pick up. I guess it's after Labor Day, so it's to be expected. But, you know, lots of really interesting things going on right now.
That's right. Well, we're going to get right into it. Let's get back after this, and we'll talk some politics and some other stuff as well.
Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The New Dominion, thenewdominion.com. Bring a splash of color to your home for fall. Home Innovations has beautiful Millmont moms right here in Fishersville. Come on by, mention this podcast, and get a free mom when you register for our HomeSense newsletter with helpful information for your home. As a bonus, you'll be registered to win $200 in free furnishings. Home Innovations, located on Route 250 in Fishersville, across from the library. Carly at the Movies. Get the scoop on what's on the big screen every Monday at thenewdominion.com.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Serena McLean. She's involved with American Rivers, and we're going to talk a little bit here about dam safety. It's not something that a lot of us think about too often. Serena, thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me, Chris.
Now, of course, we should think about it more often. It's a very important part of our infrastructure that gets overlooked, and that's the issue we're going to talk about today. An initiative to lobby Congress to commit more money to dam safety and improvements and inspections. And if you could talk about a little bit about this, it seems like at the federal level particularly, Congress really isn't paying as much attention to this as a lot of us think they should.
Well, I think, you know, at the federal level, it's really, there's so many competing interests going on at this time, you know, what with the war in Iraq and everything. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, we have anywhere between 800,000 to 2.5 million dams clogging our nation's rivers. Many of those deemed deficient or high hazard. At the moment, there's a real discrepancy in the number of dams versus the number of dam safety officials out there. It's a really underfunded area. So what we're looking at and what we're asking Congress to do is take a look at this new bill that has been proposed that actually puts additional funding to the states so that they can improve the safety on publicly owned dams through either repairing those dams or removing them.
Yeah, a report from the Association of State Dam Safety Officials looking just specifically at Virginia information, talking about the number of safety inspectors employed. The state has 5, and there are, what is it, 1,600 or so state-regulated dams. So you have one inspector for every 320 dams. The number, the recommended number is a lot lower than that.
Yeah, I think the recommended number, I think it's close to 50 per dam safety officer. Right, so I meant that right there, I mean, you know, and the way the dam safety legislation is structured now, there's like the National Dam Safety Act, which provides funding for dam safety offices to employ dam safety officials, which is a completely other arm that is also underfunded. Then there's the actual, you know, even if you have, what can those few dam safety officials do? Where's the money that actually is available to handle these deficient dams? And the problem is that money hasn't been there either. States have been forced to kind of, states and the federal government have been forced to kind of scrape together pots of money from all over to see what they could do to address these structures. And, you know, I mean, with the potential for loss of life, loss of property, there are over 10,000 dams across the United States that are classified as high hazard and could pose a serious threat to human life. Most people don't even know they live downstream in a flood inundation zone should a dam break. And so this money is at least a step in the right direction to addressing this problem and providing states with that funding to address those dams. And what we're talking about here is roughly about $200 million.
Which is a small amount of money in a relative scheme of what we're looking at the federal budget, which is usually around, what, $2 trillion a year in terms of the amount of money we commit to things. So,
yeah.
We're talking with Serena McLean with American Rivers. She's the Associate Director of the Restoring Rivers Initiative there at the American Rivers. And looking, again, at some Virginia-specific numbers, you talked about the number of high-hazard dams. According to that Association of State Dam Safety Officials report I referenced, 146 of Virginia's 1,600 state-regulated dams are classified as high-hazard. 34 of those dams structurally deficient or unsafe. So those are immediate priorities, I would think, with those words associated with them. And I was also doing some quick math in my head when we were talking. You know, 5 inspectors have to inspect an average of 320 dams. If you consider that the average guy would probably work 5 days a week, 250 days a year, they don't even have, not even counting for the fact they have some, I'm sure, paperwork to do, some time in the office they need to spend, they wouldn't even get to look at one dam a day for the entire year.
That's correct. You know, I mean, and if we're really going to extrapolate this and talk about this in terms of the real problem, part of the problem is, I mean, you're looking at small numbers of dam safety officials, so you can see how there's, you know, there's no way they're going to even be able to inspect the dams that are, you know, that they know about. The problem is, if you'll notice the huge discrepancy in the numbers, the Army, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers estimates 80,000 dams. The National Research Council and other folks have extrapolated that there roughly could be a potential of 2.5 million dams out there. There's a huge discrepancy. And we don't know the number of dams out there. So all out of those 1,600 dams you're looking at in Virginia, you can bet your money that there are many, many more dams in Virginia that either, one, aren't regulated, or, two, that people don't even know about because there aren't the people out there to, you know, to kind of there's no comprehensive inventory.
Yeah, it's interesting. Several years ago, I took a tour with some folks from the local Soil and Water Conservation District of some dams here in our backyard where the New Dominion Show is based in the Shenandoah Valley. And it was interesting to me, you know, when you think the word dam, you think of the Hoover Dam, you think of big structures with concrete and all this. And most of the dams that we're actually talking about here are very basic, I mean, earthen kind of things that you wouldn't even look at and say, well, that's a dam. That's something that is meant to direct water in a certain way. These are things that we drive by every day. And yet now that, for example, a tropical system seems to be bearing down on Virginia, we'll be thinking about these a lot in the next few days. I remember during the remnants of Hurricane Isabel when they ran through Virginia in 2003, a number of these dams failed and we had lots of flooding as a result. So we think about them only after the fact, it seems like.
This is correct. Either after the fact or during, when you've got, you know, people being evacuated from flood areas with the threat of dam failure. And we haven't seen this a lot, haven't heard of it a lot happening in Virginia, but I know in other states, you know, just as recently as last year in Maryland and the D.C. area, people were being evacuated and taken out of downstream of a dam in Maryland because, again, the rains, you know, had swollen the river so much that it was threatening to break the dam. Now, the good news is that, you know, this legislation, if people sign on, you know, would put more money in the hands of those dam safety officials to do something about these problem dams. The other good news is that, you know, the dam safety offices are working a lot of times hands in hands with other agencies within the state to see that these structures are addressed. And a lot of one of the things that we do is work with not only the states and some of your more your water resource agencies within the state or your fisheries agencies who are working on addressing dams from an ecological perspective. And when you kind of pair that with your dam safety offices, it really allows you an opportunity to take a look at dams that are no longer serving a purpose. They have no function, and look at potentially removing that threat altogether. And that really kind of, you know, gives us kind of like a 1-2 punch in terms of benefits. One, ecologically speaking, really restores the system. And two, it completely eliminates the safety threat and oftentimes decreases the threat of flooding because you've got a river that's now able to function naturally. We've seen we had a project in New Jersey where year after year, every time it rained, the local houses around behind the dam were completely flooded out. The dam was removed because it was failing. The owner had no use for it anymore. So certain funding sources were cobbled together to remove that dam. And over the past 2 years, we've heard back from the dam owner, who was also one of the property owners, and they haven't seen that flooding anymore because that water's not backed up behind the dam. And so when it rains, the river has the ability to actually carry that flow like it should.
Serena McLean with American Rivers. One more question, Serena, then we'll let you go. Just an update on the progress. The Dam Rehabilitation and Repair Act of 2007, that $200 million of money that would go to the states that we're talking about there. What is the progress of that? Do you have a feeling that that this will get the approval of Congress?
I do. I mean, when people hear about the legislation, it's a really great response. I mean, who's against dam safety?
Right.
And again, we're talking small. Very small amount of money in comparison with the overall budget. Right now it's in committee, but especially given you know, the recent push, we've seen, you know, a lot more interest in getting co-sponsors to sign on. So if people call their legislature, tell them about the bill. It's again HR 3224, the Dam Rehabilitation and Repair Act. You know, I think with enough push and just getting the word out there and letting members of Congress actually know that this is there, I think we can actually see movement in this bill.
We'll have some information on our website, thenewdominion.com, about this bill and more information about how to contact your legislator about that. Serena, thanks for your time.
No, thanks so much, Chris.
Links to blogs from across the Commonwealth. The place to go to see what people are saying. The New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com. Looking for a diamond in the rough? At this sale, you'll find more diamonds than you could ever imagine. Mark your calendar now for Saturday, beginning at 9 a.m. Join the Wayne Theater Alliance for an executor's auction of antiques, valuables, and other personal property. Auction will take place at 513 Bader Avenue in Waynesboro. For more information, including an extended list of items available, visit waynetheater.org. That's waynetheater.org. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Election 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Daniel Gilbert. Daniel is a 1969 graduate of Virginia Tech. He now lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and he's running for the Republican Party presidential nomination. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Okay, well, it's good to talk to you.
Well, now tell us, first off, what makes you want to do something crazy like run for president?
What happened about 10 or 11 or 12 months ago was I came to the conclusion that the Republicans had turned away from their conservative values, and it was all the politicians. It was not just the Republicans. It was the liberals who were getting away from the Constitution. So I said, for the man on the street to do something about this, we got to step forward and forget about the politicians. The people on the street, the businessmen and women who are real conservatives, need to step forward and replace the liberal career politicians who are entrenched in Washington, D.C. and in Raleigh, in our state, Richmond for you, who are entrenched and are running this country with liberal values, liberal principles, and we have to get back to the Constitution.
So what are you doing to get your word out? I know you have a great website. Is it wethepeople.org?
No, wethepeopleforpresident.com. .com.
Yes, I've looked on the website. I love the invoking We the People. Of course, is just great for me. But tell me what you, there's so many people out there running for president. What are you doing to communicate with the voters?
You know, there's 180. In fact,
yes,
believe it or not, we are primarily sending out a lot of op-eds and press releases that get us on radio shows and get us in the press, and we're trying to get our word out that way.
Yes.
And what we do with that is when we get on the radio show, then we start mentioning about getting and drawing conservatives into the political arena under what we call We the People banner within the Republican Party. And so we will use that banner to sort of draw people to a conservative movement within the Republican Party, because the Republican Party is not known as a conservative party right now because of what's happened in Washington, D.C. So we're thinking that if we can do this We the People movement under the Republican Party, have a banner of our own that's really truly conservative, that we will bring people in to that cause. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, very good. Daniel Gilbert, the Virginia time for us here on the New Dominion Show is he's a graduate of Virginia Tech. He's running for the Republican Party presidential nomination. And that was the what you mentioned, you know, the op-eds you're sending out. The NewDominion.com ran one, I think, a couple weeks ago, where you talked about the very subject you mentioned here. The key issue to you is getting more conservatives, getting the attention back to the conservatives within the party. It seems so interesting to look at that field of the people who are considered the top contenders right now, people like John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, who are definitely not conservative Republicans. They're definitely more to the middle, certainly, of the party, more to the left of the party, really, more to the middle of the political mainstream. What do you think needs to happen for the party to come back to its conservative roots?
Well, for one thing, it needs to change the principles of the party, because when you go on the GOP website, it is very weakly worded as far as getting back to the Constitution. Free enterprise is weakly worded as far as family values. The whole principles of the Republican Party needs to be changed to make it stronger, make it tighter, so the people who are voting for the Republicans know what they're voting for and what they should expect. Now, the problem is the principles may say one thing, but when the politicians get in office, they do something else. So that's under the We the People movement. We are going to qualify and check these people out before we let them say that they're a We the People candidate. We're going to make sure that they are truly a conservative, that they are they're pro-life, they're interested in less government instead of more government, less tax instead of more tax, more freedom instead of less freedom.
Daniel Gilbert joining us here on the New Dominion Show, talking about his candidacy for the presidency of the United States, running for the Republican Party nomination. And I'm from the interviews I do for stories for covering Virginia politics, it seems I've talked to a lot of conservatives recently who are basically saying, of course, here in Virginia in 2008, we have a Senate race up. John Warner's seat will be up, and he's not going to run for re-election. If a moderate Republican is nominated to run for that seat, they might just go fishing on Election Day. Is there a fear on your part that if a similar kind of candidate is elected selected for the national ticket, that conservatives will go home stay home on Election Day, and as a result, the conservatives won't see a candidate in office that represents their values?
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened. In 2004, we put Bush back in office. There were roughly 30 million evangelicals that voted in that election for Bush and for the Republicans. In 2006, because of the way the Republicans had been doing in Congress, they stayed home, and there were only 20 million that voted. And you saw how bad the Republicans lost. So that means that during that 2 years, the Republicans strayed, and they felt the consequences of that. And if they continue to do what they're doing right now, they're going to keep on losing. They're not going to get the voters back. They haven't done anything to regain the trust that they lost in 2006.
Daniel Gilbert joining us here on the New Dominion Show. And I think you mentioned this earlier. It's an uphill battle, certainly, for you. But at the very least, would you like to have more people join We the People, have more people get involved in this, and try to make a statement to party leaders that we want to be heard?
Absolutely. And the way we're doing that is there's a place on our website where you can sign up to get our emails. There's a place where you can donate in a place where you can volunteer. But one of the things we've realized as we've gone through this over the past several months is that because my name is not a nationally recognized name, we're going to have to get with a nationwide conservative group or a conservative person who will be a spokesman, or the group will be a sort of a vessel for our message. And the vessel is, if you are, I'll give you an example. If you are for the fair tax, okay, which is a very, it's a conservative thing. The IRS is something that we need to basically do away with. If you want the fair tax done and you want to keep up a Nancy Pelosi Congress, then the fair tax is never going to get adopted. But with the We the People, and one of our platforms is the fair tax. Okay, we can show that if we get a 200 We the People candidates in Congress, then there is a possibility that we can get fair tax through Congress. But if we don't have a bunch of people up there who are for fair tax, it'll never happen.
Well, Daniel, what's the website again?
WeThePeopleForPresident.com.
We'll have a link on our website, thenewdominion.com, to that website so you can get some more information about the campaign and about the We the People movement. And Daniel, we hope to have you on again soon to talk about the race and get an update on how things are going.
Okay. Well, I certainly enjoyed it, Graham.
The place to go to find news and views, Virginia news, radio, and TV links. Online at thenewdominion.com. Wanting success is not enough. You have to take action. Join the New Dominion in Action Coach on September 25th for the eagerly anticipated Brad Sugars World Seminar Tour. No matter what your goal, millionaire, billionaire, or even trillionaire, you will learn how to make it a reality. Get your complimentary tickets today to Billionaire in Training. Register now at thenewdominion.com. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Election 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Quentin Kidd. We're going to talk about the big news from today. Mark Warner, I guess it was not a surprise. He's running for the Senate. A lot of people have thought that. And of course, the word has been on the streets the last couple of days. But Quentin, it's now official. So maybe things are in place now. Other people can start making their moves.
Yeah, I think it certainly clears up the Senate race when it comes to who the candidates are going to be on the Democratic side. I don't think any other Democrat is going to challenge Warner in a primary, for example. On the Republican side, it looks like Tom Davis from Northern Virginia and Jim Gilmore from Northern Virginia. And there's word floating around out there that Pat Buchanan from Northern Virginia might run for the Republican primary for Senate. I don't think Pat Buchanan has much of a shot at that, but the Gilmore-Davis race in the Republican primary is interesting because they represent the two sides, the two factions of the Republican Party right now. So we may end up having a Warner-Gilmore Senate race, which would be really interesting, but who knows what will happen right now. And then on the Democratic side, I think for governor, it really clears the field for the two names that I hear a lot are Cree Deeds from Bath County and Brian Moran from Alexandria in Northern Virginia. It's sort of the two Democrats that want to run for governor next time. And then I think everybody knows Bob McDonnell and Bill Bowling are preparing themselves on the Republican side for governor. So I think it sort of starts allowing us to put chess pieces in place.
Yes, that's right. Quentin Kidd joining us here. Quentin, a regular on the New Dominion Show, and we're talking about Mark Warner. It seems at this point that I even saw some poll numbers that I think put it at a 20-point lead if Gilmore and he were to run for the Senate next November. So it's already, even before the either guy had said so, that people are already asking these questions. But is it something that we can say it's Mark Warner's definitely to lose? He should be a prohibitive favorite at this point.
Who knows what will end up happening on Election Day, but I feel pretty comfortable right now saying that it's Mark Warner's to lose. If you look at there are a lot of polls that have been done in the last few months just on various topics, and if you look at any of them, they'll ask, voters what they what kind of favorable or unfavorable view they have about people in the news. And Mark Warner's favorable opinion amongst Virginians is in the 70% still. I saw a poll a couple weeks ago that had him at 74%. When you ask people those questions about Gilmore and Davis, they're much lower. Gilmore's was in the upper 20s, and a lot of people don't know Tom Davis in the rest of the state. Gilmore's name recognition is much higher in Virginia than Tom Davis is beyond Northern Virginia. So I do think Mark Warner is in a good position right now. Here's what the way I see the Senate race shaping up. The narrative is what's really important right now. The narrative is that Mark Warner ran the state well, that he was fiscally responsible with the way he managed the state as governor. He may have raised taxes, but it was to recover from something that Jim Gilmore's administration had done, which was leave the state in a financial crisis. And so I think the challenge that a Gilmore or a Davis has is to overcome the dominant narrative that's out there right now, which is that Mark Warner did a good job as governor.
Could it actually be that Tom Davis, and this is a thought I've been having the last few days, Tom Davis as a moderate Republican and is strong in Northern Virginia, and he's a great fundraiser, as we know, could he actually maybe be a better candidate if he were to somehow win the nomination than Jim Gilmore would be in the general election?
Well, I think Davis's negatives, his unfavorable rating view amongst voters is probably lower than Gilmore's. I think Gilmore has a mighty mountain to climb when it comes to the narrative that he left his governorship in trouble. He left the state in trouble when he left the governor's office. So one could make a case, I think, that Davis would be a stronger Republican in a general election to run against Warner. However, my understanding from talking to people is that Gilmore has essentially the support he needs in the Republican Party Central Committee to have a closed caucus or an open primary or whatever kind of selection process he wants. He has the support there. And so I think it's going to be difficult for Davis if Gilmore has that kind of support at the Republican Party Central Committee.
That's right. That's Quentin Kidd joining us here from Christopher Newport University, joining us here on the New Dominion Show, talking about, we're talking about Mark Warner and everything else now that's falling into place in Virginia politics. Really, the next couple of election cycles can start to become a little clearer at this point now that Mark Warner has announced that he will run for the U.S. Senate next year. One thought that came to mind for me, because, you know, I guess we're speculating still. Mark Warner, of course, he had an aborted run for the presidential nomination last year. We assume that he still has some national aspirations for down the road. Running for the Senate seems, on one hand, to be logical in that context because, of course, you gain a national profile being a U.S. senator as opposed to being a governor. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem that senators win presidential elections too often. Maybe next year will be the case if Hillary Clinton or one of the many senators, John McCain, or former Senator Fred Thompson can win on the Republican side. But senators generally don't win that election. Governors do, though, especially Democrats. The last two presidents have been Southern governors. So in that context, can we glean anything from this about Mark Warner and his future aspirations? Or does it just seem so natural that you gain something by running for the Senate to go to the next level?
Well, I think you're exactly right. Recent history does not look favorably upon senators running for president. Lyndon Johnson was the last senator who became president. He wasn't elected the first time. He took office when former Senator Kennedy, President Kennedy, was assassinated. So we can go back into the early 60s for the last time that we've had a senator elected president. And since then, we've had the rise of federalism and devolution out of the federal level down to the state's level, and that's empowered governors. And so governors have been where we've drawn our presidents from in the last couple of decades. So one could look at recent history and say it doesn't make sense for a senator to be a senator if you're aspiring to the top job. But I think we make a mistake when we say because that's what it's been like, it never can be. And I'm sure that that's the way Mark Warner, if he has aspirations for the presidency, for example, has to think about this. Just because senators haven't been the picking grounds for presidents in recent decades doesn't mean that they won't be the picking ground in the future. And so I'm sure that most people who look at their career and make decisions when it comes to what they want to do look at history and take lessons from history, but I think it's a mistake if you let history constrain you like that.
One last question, Quentin, and we'll let you go. And this is all speculative, of course, but we're looking at 2008 now. looking at the impact that Mark's decision could have on the presidential race in Virginia. Virginia's gone Republican since, I think, 1952, if I have that right, at the presidential level. With a guy like Mark Warner and his positives, and if we look ahead and assume that maybe he'll win a comfortable margin of victory, can that translate up the ticket? Can that actually have a, I don't know, a reverse coattail effect maybe on the presidential race?
That's a good question, and if my gut says no, I'm not sure if Hillary Clinton is a Democratic Party nominee. I'm not sure that Mark Warner being on the ticket will help her a lot. What I would instead say is that Hillary Clinton being on the ticket might hurt Mark Warner, because Hillary Clinton, if she does nothing else really well, she really gins up the base of the Republican Party. And so if you get a lot of Republicans turning out to vote because they want to vote against her, then a certain proportion of them are going to vote against Mark Warner as well. So the conventional wisdom would say, no, it has negative coattails. That Mark Warner down ticket's not going to help Hillary Clinton, but Hillary Clinton might hurt Mark Warner. But you may be absolutely right. It may be that Mark Warner is able to really stoke up the middle, the moderate, the people who aren't strongly Democrat or strongly Republican. And he may be, if he's so far ahead that his win is just preordained, 3 or 4 months out, it looks like he's got no competition, then he may be able to turn some attention to helping the presidential candidate in Virginia. But, that would be a really rare circumstance, I think.
Quentin Kidd, some of the questions are starting to become clear. At least the answers to those questions are in Virginia politics, and we have a lot more to figure out as time goes on. Thanks for your time. We'll have you on again soon.
You're more than welcome.
The place to go to find news and views, Virginia News, radio, and TV links. Online at thenewdominion.com. Get informed. The New Dominion and Augusta Free Press are sponsoring a 24th District Senate Forum. David Cox, Emmett Hanger, and Aaron Syme will debate the issues on October 22nd at 7 p.m. at Westwood Hills Elementary School in Waynesboro. For all the details, visit AugustaFreePress.com.
I want to thank our guest once again. We had Serena McClain talking dam safety, Quentin Kidd talking about Virginia politics, of course, the big Mark Warner news today, and Daniel Gilbert, a Republican Party presidential candidate, joining us, and hopefully we'll have Daniel on a good bit as the campaign season unfolds for that 2008 nomination. I haven't even had a 2007 election, Crystal. We're already talking a couple of things 2008 here.
Well, that was part of the reason I think Mark Warner said he wanted to keep his announcement really low-key, sending out an email, because he said, hey, I don't want to take anything away from, the elections that are going on right now.
Yeah, he emphasized that when I interviewed him in Buena Vista on Labor Day a couple of weeks ago, as much as, of course, my questions and other reporters' questions were about, what you going to do, Mark? What are you going to do, 2008, 2009? He said, look, 2007 still hasn't happened yet. It's very important to him as a Democrat, as a Democratic leader, to see things moving in a certain direction. Jim Gilmore said the same thing. Of course, I hinted earlier in the show that the big story, the top story this week on thenewdominion.com is about Jim Gilmore and what his plans are now for either 2008 or 2009. And he kept insisting the same thing. Chris, it's all about 2007 right now. After that, we can really focus on the next elections. But give them credit. They're at least mouthing those words. But in the back of their mind, the most important thing, maybe not even the back, towards the front, somewhere in the middle there, is what they're going to do next. And so they have to lay that groundwork. But anyway, a lot of big stuff going on there. Quickly, we'll do a couple of morning edition notes. Morning edition runs on thenewdominion.com every weekday morning around 9 or 9:30, sometimes a lot earlier than that, depending on when I get in the office. Usually I'm here crack of dawn, but headlines from newspapers across the state about things making news in Virginia. One thing, animal advocacy groups petitioning the judge in the Michael Vick case to be harsh on him. 5 years, they say, is what he should get for those that dogfighting plea that he entered earlier, I guess it was last month now.
Well, on the flip side, Michael Vick is attending church and trying to do some community service to try to get the sentence perhaps lightened. So you don't really know which side the judge is going to fall on. Now, initially, reports were that this judge is pretty tough and that Michael Vick likely isn't going to get any breaks in this court. Now, I know he was really hoping for initially 1 year or less. I think most experts predict that it'll likely be 18 to 24 months that he'll actually end up serving. 5 years? I don't know. I mean, you have to look at similar cases, and you know, the people who've been speaking out, who follow cases like this on a regular basis, are saying, hey, most of these cases, they do go to jail for 2 years or less. So I think, you know, unless this judge is really out to make Michael Vick a major example, I think his sentence will likely fall a little lighter. That being said, you know, already people who perhaps were involved in dogfighting before and maybe are of the professional athlete stature are probably thinking twice about it right now, because 2 years is potentially the end to their careers.
Michael Vick, former Virginia Tech quarterback, segue. I'm trying to attempt a clumsy segue from serious news to some sports news, because NewDominion.com, we cover sports news here too. Big news this week on the football field for the Hokies of 2007, not looking back a decade or so. Tyrod Taylor, true freshman from the Newport News area, will be starting at quarterback for the Hokies this weekend against Ohio U. And former quarterback now, Sean Glennon, he's the backup now, junior. He actually is a senior in school because he redshirted a year, indicating in a newspaper interview that he's thinking about transferring at the end of the season. So a little bit of turmoil there with that team after the big loss to LSU last weekend. But you know what? I'll say this. Sean Glennon can transfer if he wants to. Tyrod Taylor looks like the real deal.
Yeah, and, you know, as a Tech alum, I've never been a Sean Glennon fan. You know, even when the predictions were early this season that Tech was going to, you know, they were ranked in the top 10. I mean, I think as high as 7 at one point. You know, I never believed we were going to be that good. I mean, we do, you know, we had the strength of a good defensive line, but they haven't even proved themselves yet this season. And I knew with Sean Glennon at quarterback, we were going to continue to have struggles. Unfortunately, I just, you know, I was never a big fan of his. I think they've made the right decision. You know, even though we have a true freshman now that'll be leading things on the field, so to speak, at least he's the future. And you can start priming him for future seasons as well. So I think it's a good move by Virginia Tech. I will be really interested to see him play, because I thought the move was somewhat unexpected. I had thought, even with Sean Glennon not performing up to a lot of people's expectations, that he would remain on the field this season.
Well, you know what's interesting? Frank Beamer, in a conference call that I was on yesterday, addressed that issue, and he said as recently as that first game against East Carolina, Glennon struggled in that game, but Beamer in his head still after that game said he's going to redshirt Tyrod Taylor, which of course means he's not going to play him this year. And then something changed between that Saturday night after that ECU win and LSU in the second quarter when he stuck him in the game. Obviously, it just told Frank Beamer, whatever happened between that Saturday and the next Saturday said he needs to get him on the field. Now,
I think it might have been the fact that they couldn't do anything against LSU. They had to shake things up. And hey, you know, here was this, you know, true freshman on the field. Let's give him a shot. Let's see what he can do.
Having seen Tyrod Taylor play against LSU now, of course, they still lost the game 48-7. He did lead them to the one touchdown they scored in that game. He has a pocket presence. He can run. He looks like another guy. That's why I segued from Michael Vick to this. He might even be better. And if Michael Vick only stayed 2 years at Virginia Tech, maybe that's another reason to get him on the field, because you know what? The kid's not going to be there very long, so let's get as much of him as we can here. Well, you know, I'm going to abbreviate our discussion here on the Morning Edition. Check us out every weekday morning on thenewdominion.com. Headlines about everything, sports and news and politics included there on thenewdominion.com.
Sign up for our free newsletter. You can do that on thenewdominion.com as well. You'll get that delivered to your email box every week.
That's right. It's free. And free and fun. You get it. If you miss anything, it's all in the newsletter.
And there's some exclusive, you know, from the business side of things, there's kind of some exclusive offers for people there too. So another incentive to sign up.
Certainly is. Well, thank you once again for joining us on the New Dominion Show. We'll be back next week.
The New Dominion is a production of Augusta Free Press. All rights reserved. For more on the New Dominion, visit our website at thenewdominion.com. And look for the New Dominion magazine at a bookstore near you. The New Dominion, everything Virginia.